In just a moment, Craig Ballantyne is going to be coming up on the show, but I've had a hell of a morning, guys. I woke up this morning after dealing with some malware issues on the site last night. Woke up this morning to find that the servers were wiped. Everything was gone. The websites were wiped off of the server. And if you are trying to get some back episodes, please be patient. That stuff will all be restored eventually, but I'm just trying to do it piece by piece. The other thing is we have had some people drop off from support of the show, and you know I really do hope that people believe in the show that's being produced for everyone that is tuning in. If you do want to help support the show, you can do it two ways, and it just takes a couple seconds. Go to patreon.com/thefitcast. You can support the show starting at $1 per episode. We have some incredible people that have been supporting the show at $2, $3, $5, some even $10 per episode. Thank you so much. But we're right now at about 150 people that support the show, and I hope that some people out there that really do believe in it will step up and help fill in some of those spots. And again, it's for days like this where I spent the last 8 hours trying to restore the website where those funds really, really help out. And as you've heard in previous episodes, this is pretty much my only source of income right now. So I really hope you guys are able to support the show going forward. And I am still playing around with, and hopefully details will be final, but it looks like I was really just hoping that people would support the show and we can keep everything kind of the way it is. But I think I am going to need to find some sort of exclusive content for Patreons, for people that are supporting the show, because I have not been able to reach that Patreon goal just yet to make it so everything kind of stay the same. Everyone can download the previous, like literally 424 episodes of the podcast. And it's tough. It's tough doing this stuff as a business, and it's tough doing a somewhat niche podcast like the FitCast. But hopefully you guys, you know, believe in the quality and again, understand where I'm coming from with all this stuff. So thank you so much for just listening to me chat for a second, and let's get into the episode with Craig. And please, you got two ways, fitcast.network and patreon.com/thefitcast to support the podcast. And again, I appreciate all your support. Thank you so much. Let's get to the episode. Coming up in this episode of the FitCast, I got Craig Ballantyne back on the show. Craig has been a huge supporter of the show all the way back to episode number 2. Like literally for over 10 and a half years, Craig and I have been chatting on this show. And we're going to be talking about his new book, The Great Cardio Myth, as we start this episode. But it actually evolves into one of my favorite discussions that we've had on the show in a long, long time. And it is vital for people that are in the fitness industry or that are curious about where the industry is going. I think you guys are really gonna love this. And we hit on one of the main driving forces for me going forward, and that what's driving me in the industry in terms of research and figuring out where we're going next. So I hope you can hang out all the way to the end. It is just absolutely fantastic, and it's always great to get some awesome insight from Craig Ballantyne. So here it is. Let's get right into the episode. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show, I don't know how many times it is right now, but it was literally the episode 2. It was the very first guest that I was fortunate enough to have on this podcast almost 11 years ago now, which every time we get to talk, I just I love to look back and just to see how far you have come, and I guess how far we've all come. But I'm very happy to have back on the show Craig Ballantyne. Craig, how are you?
This is awesome, Kevin. Thank you for having me on here. I hope that maybe you'll let me come back as your 500th show whenever you
Hell
do
yeah.
that. Let's be coming up on that. So this is really great. I'm so proud of you for what you've done here for all the fitness pros in the world. This is really, really fantastic.
Well, I mean, as everyone knows, we're just going to have a lot of fun today. And the cool thing about talking with you is that we get to hit on just a wide range of subjects. One of the big things we're going to be talking about today is the brand new book, The Great Cardio Myth, that you also did with Chelsea Ratcliffe. So we're going to absolutely talk about that. But like I said, it's just been amazing to see the incredible work that, like, I see multiple things that you're doing every single day, whether it be things on Early to Rise, you know, the Perfect Day Formula. And of course, you know, way back when we originally talked, it was all about turbulence training, but you're doing tons of fantastic stuff. You're mentoring people on in the fitness industry, on business, on personal development, on making the best use of your time. So I'm sure we're just going to hit on a bunch of those things throughout the show, but let's start with a book, because I want to ask you, you know, this is a book that I got to read through over the last couple of days. And like the first thing that I would probably think of is that if I want a book to give to, and this is, again, this is me kind of like, this is a book that is going to be great for strength coaches out there, personal trainers, anyone that's like into fitness, because this book is written for the people that we usually try to need to, not necessarily convince, but we need to have that discussion of like, hey, this is why we should be spending more time on your strength training and maybe a little bit less time, you know, going on that, you know, 5-10 mile run every single day, especially with that aging population as well. Was that kind of the angle that you're going for with this book?
I think you kind of give people a little too much credit about the 5-10 mile run.
Yeah,
you know, if you're doing 5 or 10 mile runs every day, you probably got a reason for doing that. But it is definitely for the people who think that cardio is going to help them with weight loss. That's the main thing, but also just with general fitness. And, you know, as advanced trainers, we know that you don't have to go for a jog to get fit, to live long. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at people in the blue zones. The people in the blue zones around the world, which are, you know, the areas of extreme longevity, have they ever used an elliptical machine?
Exactly.
Have they ever gone to the gym? Have they ever gone to Planet Fitness and, you know, made sure that they didn't set off the lunk alarm? No. I mean, you know, these people, you don't need cardio to do to live a long life. There's so many other factors here. And mm-hmm. you don't need cardio to get ripped. And you don't need cardio to do almost anything except for to do lots of cardio. You know, if you want to run marathons, then yeah, you need to run. But for most people, it's a very inefficient use of their time. And so that's what we want to convey the message to. And we also want people who use cardio for kind of darker sides of things, which, mm-hmm. you know, like food addictions and that mm-hmm. sort of stuff, to realize that, listen, the first step of, you know, getting away from those things that are causing you a lot of pain are to, you know, to dial back on that stuff. And, you know, one of the examples we use in the book is I found this New York Times article about these three women that ran the New York Marathon in 9 hours. 9 hours. I mean, that's how long it took them to finish. Mm-hmm. And this was their logic, that every mile equaled a cupcake. And so at the end of this marathon, they were going to go out and try and eat, 9,000 calories. Because if, you know, like every mile is a cupcake, they think they're totally off base, because a cupcake is like 350 to 400 calories mm-hmm. and a mile actually only burns about 100 calories. And that's why people are gaining weight with cardio. One of the reasons, first of all, they get hungry from cardio. And second of all, they overconsume because they overestimate how many calories are burned during activity. Not to mention, there's research that shows cardio machines overestimate the calorie burn by up to 42%, with the elliptical machine being the worst offender. So I can go and rant and rave all day long, and that's why you know, someone actually gave me a deal to write a book about this, because it is just so ridiculous how cardio has become this thing. And, you know, a lot of us, I'm ranting here, Kevin, so cut me off anytime, but, you know, we live in this bubble, you and I, of thinking that people know how to train, because you've worked at Boyle's and and, you know, I train at good gyms. But if you go into most gyms, most commercial gyms, most people are still on the cardio machines. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like this is something that everybody knows, even though anybody that works out hard or does CrossFit or this, that, or the other thing knows about other ways of exercise, but there's still tens of millions of people wasting their lives.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge point to bring up, because like that's one of the things that you're totally right. We're in a little bit of a bubble, but you know, I think when people think about like quote unquote getting in shape, losing weight, whatever, like their first thing is like, all right, I'm going to get a pair of running shoes. Like that is, that's like the first step in their process. And when they step into a gym, it's the world of weights and strength training is a little bit of a, you know, a different universe for them, but they recognize a treadmill, they see the elliptical, and it's a little bit less of a barrier to entry. But I mean, one of the things that I loved about the book is that you did put an emphasis on body weight training, talking about the strength training program, because even just having the world of strength training with weights, or even having the access to that stuff, can be what keeps people in the cycle of just like wanting to go for a jog, or, you know, go on the recumbent bike or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's really getting the knowledge out there to people that there are other alternatives and that you can use body weight only. And that way you can just go on YouTube and watch so many of my videos. And I have, you know, 1 4-minute workout that's been watched over a million and almost 1.5 million times. Right. And so you can do that, or you can do kettlebells, or you can do all sorts of stuff. And I'm actually the opposite. You know, I've got this little garage gym where I've got all this stuff in it. And, you know, you can't go outside in wintertime here, so it's not like I ever could go for a jog. So I'm forced to do the other stuff, as opposed to going to the gym where people are intimidated by the equipment in the strength area, and they just, you know, go and use the treadmill because it's easiest. And I've always said that going for a jog is the most mindless form of exercise, because all you have to do is put one foot in front of the other. But, you know, to focus on a proper deadlift, or to, you know, do a, today I did double kettlebell front squats, which are not, you know, the most pleasant thing in the world. but they are, like, in a sadistic way, like one of my favorite exercises. And so, you know, it does take focus and concentration. So not only does it take more effort muscularly, but it also takes you to focus on, you know, the technique. And so that really, you know, at the end of the day, a person who is just kind of, you know, gotten to the gym at 5 o'clock and they've had a rough day with the boss and they're kind of hungry, it's so much easier just to default to, you know, the cardio theater and go over there. So, you know, it's all about showing them the options, giving them, you know, the right ways of training, and showing them, hey, you know, you can also get these workouts done in half the time, and that also, or even less than, you know, 40 minutes on a cardio machine. And that really gets people's interest.
Yeah, I think like one of the chapters that like was a total aha moment for me was strength training, the new running for the over 40s. Because, you know, again, as someone that, you know, has trained people in their, you know, coming like people that are literally still in college or coming right out of college and wanting to still have a good fitness regimen, they're not necessarily as hard to convince that strength training is vital as, you know, those people that we come in that are in their 40s or 50s and all they've really done in the past is cardiovascular work and then needing to introduce them to the world of strength training. But like I said, this is like one of those books where, you know, for my friends and family members that are part of, I think you even mentioned in the book, like that cardio like revolution of the 70s, like for people that were part of that exposure to media and stuff like that, like this is going to be the perfect book for them because it explains and it dispels a lot of those myths that they grew up with and that they got through the media.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is about so much of that, you know, revolution of the early 60s and 70s that Kenneth Cooper put people on with the introduction to aerobics, it ended up being kind of distorted and became this perverse thing for university professors to study, because all the university professors at that time, or not all of them, but a lot of them were into marathon running. And so all they did was all of this research on marathon running and the right fuel for marathon running. And then somehow journalists took all of this information, all this research on cardiovascular training for marathons and refueling for marathon training, you know, like the high carb stuff, and they turned it into weight loss stuff, and they turned it into the diet stuff. And that's why we had, you know, the early 90s focus on low carb and, or sorry, on low fat and high carb, and, you know, Seinfeld episodes about it, because it became so ridiculous. And we had low fat snack wells that people were eating, you know, 500 calories of, you right. know, as carbohydrates, because they read that, hey, do cardio and eat carbs and you'll lose weight, but it's really do cardio and eat carbs and you'll run a 3-hour marathon. And that's not the same thing as losing weight, especially for Mrs. Jones out in Kansas. So, you know, that was the whole perversion of aerobics that really, kind of irked me when I was a graduate student back in the 90s. And it led me to all of this stuff. And I actually created turbulence training for all of my friends who had graduated college and, you know, no longer had time for 2.5 hour workouts. You know, they couldn't go and do an hour and a half of weights and then an hour of cardio, but they still wanted the same results. And so I put the supersets and intervals together for turbulence training way back then, which since has evolved, of course. But that was, you know, the impetus for it to overcome the myth of cardio that, you know, still is pervasive today.
Well, yeah, and I do want to mention, like, for people out there that are thinking of picking up the book, because, you know, I don't want to necessarily, like, you know, go through everything that's in the first, you know, 2/3 of the book, because I think those are really crucial to actually digest yourself, because it's going to really help you in the conversations that you have with, you know, family members, even with your clients and the athletes that you could potentially be working with that you're trying to help them reach their goals. But then it's also important for you to help them understand why you are kind of programming the way that you are. You can't always just say, you're paying me to do this. You can't just have that kind of antagonistic look at it. But the book is literally $15 on Amazon right now. It's $15.17 in the US if you want to go pick it up. But I want to talk a little bit about the strength training program, and I want to talk a little bit about how things have evolved for you as a coach and some of that programs from all the way back in turbulence training. Like, I think you mentioned the book, and again, it's incredible to kind of look back, but it's like 2001. Now we're in 2017. I'm kind of just curious how your methodologies have changed from the way that you program the strength training workouts in terms of, like, you know, priorities or exercise selection and things like that.
Well, you know, I wouldn't actually change the turbulence training workouts from back then too much. You know, there's, right. You know, back then it was still, you know, a superset of squats and pull-ups. Well, You know, how do you make that much better, you know?
Exactly.
It's hard to. Now, there's a lot other ways of doing interval training, but I kept it pretty simple in that program, you know, like a minute on, minute off, or 30 seconds on, 60 seconds off. A lot of that came from the hockey strength and conditioning that I was doing back then, but I just knew that it worked so well, and a side effect from the athletes that I worked with was, you know, losing body fat. Mm-hmm. So really there's not that much that I would change. In fact, I still train quite much like that. Today you see a little bit more in terms of different exercises. You know, you've got all these types of implements. Kettlebells were just becoming popular back then. I was, you know, one of those skeptical guys about it. So really, does it change much? I don't think so. My customers over the years have demanded, you know, less equipment. And so we've gone to, you know, TRX, and then we've gone all the way to absolutely no equipment for the bodyweight mm-hmm. workout. So I've had to get inventive with bodyweight exercises. But, you know, the truth is, if I was taking myself or a friend through a program and they had 30 to 45 minutes and they wanted to gain muscle and lose fat at the same time, I wouldn't do much different than the original turbulence training, provided they had access to all the equipment. And then over the years, maybe we sped things up. Maybe we went back to circuit training and shorter rest periods. But my system was built so that you also kind of got stronger at the same time, too, if you were like the average person training with, you know, 10 to 12 reps. So, you know, not too much, but it's just, you know, people are like, okay, I've done this workout 3 times. I need something new. So that's why I kept on coming up with new stuff.
That literally, like, was the next thing I was going to mention, is that I think it was, like, it was way back in, like, the turbulence training 2K3 or something like that, that really introduced me to, you know, going with lower reps for my strength training. I was totally in that, like, not even maybe 8 to 12, more like 10 to 15 reps, because I was still in my, I'm going to go play some basketball in college, so I don't want to get too bulky mindset. And right. I ended up actually, like, getting, in, like, way stronger and significantly improving my strength levels by, you know, doing what, you know, at that time was a, you know, quote unquote fat loss program. So that was super vital. So, you know, again, something that you mentioned, you know, implementation of kettlebells. And again, props to you, just great demos and coaching cues if for kettlebell stuff in the book. So again, that's something in our industry that can tend to, you know, depending on who's coaching, can get butchered. But again, kudos to you for great demos and great coaching cues on that stuff for people. If you want to get a little bit of introduction to kettlebell stuff, like kettlebell swings, if you need to, this is going to be a good book to do it as well. But Let's talk a little bit about varying intensity, because that is another component of how you program and in the programs in the book. So, you know, varying intensity, is that something that you're going to implement in strength training and in the like interval training for the things that you're doing in terms of like sprints and intervals instead of your cardiovascular work?
Well, it depends on what we're training for, but I'm, you know, it's, we're not going to have them train at the same highest intensity all the time, but you know, we're keeping them to three short workouts per week. Mm-hmm. It's pretty high intensity, and I don't rotate it too much for an average person who's just getting into the gym and fitness stuff. And mm-hmm. so that's the majority of people I work with. And so I don't really do, you know, undulating periodization or anything like that. It's just, listen, we're going to go in the gym. We're going to aim for around this rep range, and we're going to use these basic exercises. And then we're going to do some type of high intensity interval training, whether it's body weight only, whether it is, you know, on the treadmill, whether it is sprinting hills. And we're just going to, you know, make sure you don't overdo it, and we're going to get you great results that way. And so that's really what I focus on there. And then, you know, every 4 to 6 weeks, take that 1 week of reduced volume, one set, and maybe doing about 80% the intensity of what you normally do. Hmm. And then, you know, just get in, get out, do some mobility work, you know, maybe only train twice a week and go and do some fun activities on these other days and come back refreshed and crush the workouts after that.
Well, let me ask you, because I know this is going to be, you know, a question that we will be getting asked as coaches and as trainers, but where does traditional cardio fit in, if at all? Because I know when a lot of people, you know, bring that up as, you know, for clients and even athletes, it's like, you know, that's just for me to go clear my mind, like is going for a run after work or something like that. That's important for me to do. Is there still a place for it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you want to do it, if you love to do it, then by all means do it. What we wrote the book for was, listen, you don't like doing this. It's not getting you results. Here's how you should actually exercise.
Right.
And then it's also, you know, if you're overdoing it, if you're the type of person who is, you know, training 6 days a week with no reason, like you're not a competitive marathon runner, but you think you should be out running, you know, miles every week, well, you're going to end up with knee problems. You're going to end up with back problems. You're going to hurt yourself. You're wasting your time. You've probably got other stuff to do. And so, you know, over the years, my clientele has evolved, and I operate now in a world of busy people. Mm-hmm. And if I can save them, you know, 30 minutes a week by having them not run a mile on a treadmill to warm up, because that's really kind of useless for them in most cases, well, I'm going to cut that out. Or, you know, if I can say, hey, listen, you're training 5 days a week right now, and you want to get these results, you're not going to get any better results if you train five than if you train four. So let's cut that back and give you a day where you go and spend that workout time walking the dog, or, you know, taking your kids for a walk, or doing errands and just staying active. You're not going to lose any benefits. So let's actually make your life better. So that's what we are looking at doing. And then if you actually need cardiovascular training for whatever reason, if you do want to run a 10K in 8 weeks from now, well, we'll probably have you work up to that. Or if you want to run a tough mutter, we're probably going to have you work up to doing some higher volume cardiovascular training. But we're not going to force it in there because, again, it's not really necessary for anything that the average person wants to achieve.
And I don't know how I necessarily want you to answer this question, but the question that I wanted to ask was in terms of like making sure that we're focusing our energy on things that are important. So like making effective use of that energy in terms of fitness, in terms of nutrition, health, but of course we also got to make sure that we consider our business and what we do for our careers and family and life. So I'm kind of curious, again, you know, with the great work that you're doing with things like Earlier to Rise and the Perfect Day Formula, how do you usually have those conversations with the people that you're trying to help them find some balance?
Great question. And so what we do is we work through what their priority is. You know, what's your number one priority in life? In most cases, it's going to be family. Okay, well, let's make sure that we're not neglecting family. And then let's start building a weekly structure, a daily schedule around, first of all, how can you make sure that you're not robbing your family of time, that you're appearing at all the most important events for them? And then making sure, okay, well, in order to support this family, we obviously have to perform at work or in our business. what can we do to structure our days so that we are most effective operating within whatever guidelines you have to operate in? I mean, if you have to be at your desk from 9 to 5, then we have to make sure that we operate around that. Mm-hmm. And then getting in your health and activity and your nutrition. Okay, well, on the weekends, you're probably going to have the greatest time to, you know, do some batch preparation for your nutrition. So that's classic. Everybody knows about making meals on the weekend and planning ahead. And then it's simply having that planning session for the week ahead, identifying all the obstacles that are going to be coming in your way. And, you know, like, you know, that Wednesday, it's going to be super busy at work. And then we have to go immediately to take the kids to practice and to recitals. And we're not going to have time to make any good food. So where can we stop, or what can we pack in advance, and making sure that we don't fall off track? Everything is preparation and planning, Kevin, as you know, whether it's being prepared for a client or being prepared for a trip. And when we're not prepared, we make mistakes because we're all human. But when we're prepared, we overcome all the obstacles in our way. So it is a matter of, first of all, clarity about where we want to go. So I call it my personal getting to Disney World story. So if you want to go to Disney World, you know exactly where it is. You can go and you can Google map it. And you say, okay, I live in Philadelphia. I need to fly to Orlando. Then I need to go to a rental car place. I punch in the address of the, you know, Disney World, and I just follow the GPS. And that is the same type of clarity we need with our lives. Okay, in 3 years from now, I want to be living on this street with my family in this situation, working these hours and doing these things with my family every day, and doing these things on the weekend with my family, and doing these things annually with my family. This is what my life is going to look like. Okay, now we reverse engineer. How do we get to that position? Because we know when we go to Disney World exactly what road to take, and we know when we want to achieve that lifestyle what exact straight line of success we need to take. And that allows us to overcome detours in our life, such as being, you know, if you want to get engaged in 3 years, I think I might have told this story the last time we were talking, but you know, if you want to get engaged and married in 3 years to this person that you're dating right now, and you know you're 29 years old and you're a trainer at a gym and you also want to have your own facility, well, that's very clear where you want to get to. And so when some guy from college comes along and says, hey, we're going to Vegas and it's going to be this amazing bachelor party, and you say, I can't do that because, you know, something bad's going to happen and I'm going to get in trouble with my girlfriend who I want to be my fiance, and I'm not going to, you know, ruin my future for one weekend in Vegas, I'm too old for that. And it keeps you on track and it helps you say no to the detours so you stay on the straight line of success. And so when you have that vision in place, Kevin, you have mental clarity and you get rid of mental clutter and all these opportunities that come flying in your face. And I know you're getting a lot right now because you know, you're in between things right now and all these people are offering you things, but you need to have a clear vision of where Kevin Larrabee wants to be in 3 years from now. Right. And then it's really easy for you to say no to things, even if they sound like a lot of fun. Even if, you know, it's you're just trying some things out, you have to say no to a lot of things in order to be a very successful person. And that's one of Warren Buffett's best quotes, is the difference between successful and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything. Right. And so whether you're a family man, whether you're a businessman, whether you're, you know, family woman, whatever, businesswoman, you need to know exactly where you want to be. And then you know exactly how to get there. And you know exactly what to say yes to and exactly what to say no to.
And yeah, that's something, if you haven't checked out the Perfect Day Formula, that there's a lot of good you know, activities that you can go through just to help you with your thought process. That's been valuable for me. And again, like you said, it's for me right now, it's about figuring out, not necessarily to go find something, but to find the right something to do for the next, you know, five years or so, 5, 10 years, 20 years, who knows? But I'm curious because, again, you work with a lot of people, not just in the fitness industry, but just people that are successful, that are trying to get a little bit more successful. Like, what do you think are the things that help people reach that next level, that good to great, or even that great to almost like expert level?
Well, I mean, you have to, again, have that clarity of exactly where you want to get to, and then accept the sacrifices that are going to be required of you to get to whatever advanced level in your life. And I often say this in my Facebook posts and in my Twitter posts. If you want advanced results, you must take advanced measures. You can't get advanced results by doing average things. And so if you really want to become a bodybuilder, you want to become, you know, a college athlete, you have to take advanced results. You have to accept the sacrifices. And success is actually quite simple. It's just very, very difficult. You know, we have to do a lot of hard work. We have to have discipline. We have to have willpower. We have to make sacrifices. But if you mentally accept all of that and you say, listen, this is going to be a hard road, you know, it's going to be climbing uphill, but other people have done it. Success has left clues. It's clear how I do this. I'm just going to go and do it. Then you can become successful in many, many areas of life. And even if you can't be in the top 5%, you can definitely get so much better at anything that you want in life because everything is a learnable skill.
I mean, this might be kind of the same question, but how do I want to put this? I guess actually let's jump back into fitness because again I'm kind of being selfish right here, asking a lot about personal development stuff and the great work that you're doing with Early to Rise and the Perfect Day Formula. But I want to talk a little bit more about not just like fitness and but also nutrition, because it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, like one of the big things that we need to do as fitness professionals is just make this as easy as possible for the people that we're trying to help to implement. So you mentioned things like, you know, food prep is one of the big things that we can use, but I'm curious if there's been any of the things over the last couple of years to be like, yeah, this is a kind of a simple thing that we see a lot of people not really paying attention to and doing a good job at, that they just, you know, spending a little bit more energy and attention could make a drastic difference in helping them reach their fitness goals.
Absolutely. And so the answer I'm going to give you, I've kind of mentioned already, and it's not what anybody thinks I'm going to say, is say no to more things. I mean, there's a funny article online, like the 14 things successful people do before breakfast. And the truth is, successful people don't do 14 things before breakfast. They do like one or two important things. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, I coach so many people now, you know, entrepreneurs to you know, busy parents, and they're all so overwhelmed by the 19 things they're supposed to do before breakfast. They're supposed to get up and meditate and journal and have gratitude and then exercise and then, you know, send emails and then do Facebook lives. I mean, they're told to do all of these things, and it is so ridiculous and so inappropriate and just not possible. And so the answer is, let me simplify your life. Let's go through it and let's figure out, you know, if you do this, is it really going to have a significant impact on your life? I mean, I'm the author of a gratitude journal and I don't use it every day because I did use it every day for a long time. And now I'm feeling very confident in my gratitude abilities that I don't need to use it every day. Mm. And so I don't have that stress. But if you have a checklist of 12 things that you think you're supposed to do before breakfast, before you even get into your real work, you're going to be very frustrated. And so this goes back to programming. Okay, listen, you think you have to do 10 exercises and 3 sets of each. What if I told you, Mrs. Jones, that if you just did 4 exercises and 1 hard set, you'd probably get 75% of the results if compared to if you did 10 exercises and 3 sets. Hmm. And we could do this little interval training instead of this cardio workout. And you could actually be in and out of the gym 3 times per week in 25 minutes. And like I said, probably get 80% of the results as that fitness competitor friend of yours, as long as your nutrition is really good. And we're going to help you make those simple choices too by preparing on the weekends to have your meals in place. And we're going to show you how to avoid the temptations, because in most people's lives, Kevin, we can do the right thing 6 days per week, but it's that one bad thing we do on the 7th day that actually derails all of our progress. Mm-hmm. You know, you go and eat a 100 calorie appetizer, then you eat a 1500 calorie entree, and you have 1500 calories worth of daiquiris, and then you eat a 1500 calorie piece of chocolate cake of chocolate thunder from down under at the Outback Steakhouse. And you're 6,000 calories deep, and I don't care what you've read, Mrs. Jones, at 135 pounds, that is not an acceptable cheat meal. Mm-hmm. I mean, your metabolism is not going to crank up 4,500 calories. I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. So, you know, this is the type of, hey, let's slow things down. Let's simplify our lives, because the world is getting too crazy busy for you right now, and I'm going to save you 3 hours a week. And with this proper exercise program and with these nutrition plans, And then you can go and actually live your life with less stress.
Another thing I want to ask you about is, you know, again, it is just kind of, it's fun to look back, but also to look forward and to see what's next. And again, you're doing so many different things now, but, you know, for people in the audience, I'm sure they'd love to hear, like, where do you see the fitness industry going? Because even just looking back 10 years, it's changed so dramatically in terms of what, you know, fitness professionals need to offer to be successful. What do you see the future to be for fitness professionals to stay at that top tier level and to not get left behind?
Well, I think that you have to have that third place mentality for your fitness facility. And that third place mentality is what Starbucks called itself. You know, everybody goes to three places. They go home, they go to work, and they go to Starbucks.
Right.
And so you need to make sure that your location, you know, it's a place that people don't mind spending 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after for training. And you need to have that supportive environment. You know, part of the five pillars of success that I talk about in the Perfect Day Formula, you need to have positive social support. And so, you know, the group training aspect just gets so many people into it. I mean, CrossFit is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. I don't see CrossFit going away anytime soon. I don't see, you know, fit body boot camps going away anytime soon, because it's really tapped into that tribal mentality, which is what humans want to be a part of. And so I think that we're actually going to go deeper and deeper into that. Maybe it'll splinter off into more types of training. I mean, the Orange Theory has been a surprise to me that it's stuck around as long as it has, because, you know, the workouts are kind of long to me. I'm not really into that type of training. But again, it's that positive group, social support. It's the type of person who wants to be competitive. You know, it's immediate feedback, which is probably what was missing from, you know, personal training 10 years ago, where, you know, you didn't have a heart rate monitor on them. You were keeping track of their reps, but, you know, what was that really telling anybody? They couldn't see themselves getting better from workout to workout. Now you've got that competitive mindset in there. So I think that we'll see a continuation of that. And I don't know where it goes from there. I mean, I know some guys that are working really hard on gamification of stuff. So, you know, the apps are in there, but I guess if you take a look at it in the same way that Facebook has us addicted, we're addicted because we get immediate reward, and immediate reward increases dopamine in our minds, in our brains. And, you know, that is a pleasure center, you know, reward stimulus. And so that gets us hooked on the dings and the buzzes and the, you know, the blips and the bleeps for, you know, incoming message. And we're seeing that in the fitness world. You know, you can check your heart rate monitor in real time. You can compare yourself against Joe, who's on the treadmill beside you, in real time. And so we are just getting overloaded. And maybe in 10 years from now, we'll just see everybody take a step back and say, whoa, I don't want any of that stuff. I just want to go and train, and it'll be all about mindfulness and Zen. Who knows? But right now, I don't think anything's going to disrupt CrossFit and Orange Theory and Fit Body Bootcamp for a while.
That is such an awesome point to bring. I've never heard it mentioned that way. The place where someone wants to be, but also 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after. Because this is something that I've been talking about with a lot of fitness professionals, and that's something I feel very strongly about. Is like it's like what you said with CrossFit, but almost doing it even better, with the sense of community and the sense of inclusiveness that some of these newer facilities that I see popping up do a fantastic job with. That's such a great way to put it.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, there's several things I love about millennials, and it's their commitment to, you know, the social justice and community aspect of things, which as they become more into fitness, you know, gyms are probably going to become more of a place where it's not just a workout center. It's going to have all sorts of other things in it, you know, besides like what gyms have in it now. Like they have massage stuff and, you know, float tanks and stuff. But I mean, you're going to see these facilities that are really built around communities. And yeah, oh, we also have a gym here.
Right.
That type of thing. And, you know, when Jason Ferrugia ran his place out in New Jersey, in like 2006-ish, he had a 2000, maybe 2007 or eight, in 2009, and his brother runs it now. But, you know, people would come in for the 4 o'clock session. And, you know, the 3 o'clock session was going on, but they'd show up at 3:30 and do foam rolling and chit chat because, you know, they were all longtime friends. And then, you know, they'd hang around till, you know, if their session was at 4, they'd still be there at 4:30 chatting with the other people and saying, hey, you know, Friday night, we're all going to meet up. Mm. And again, that's what I see a lot of with this millennial aspect. I know that, you know, there's some of these millennial entrepreneurs travel the world in these packs and, you know, they all go and they hang out in Chiang Mai. And it's just this millennial mindset of community is really, really powerful. And I think that we're going to see more and more community inside the gym. So there's going to be fewer people like me who just want to go to a gym, walk in, not be disturbed. There's going to be very few of those people. And the more people that get into fitness, they're going to be there for the social aspect of it.
God, yeah, I totally agree. I guess my question may be bouncing off of that. And I literally, the next question I was going to ask you was a millennial question, because that's like Simon Sinek video kind of blew up over the last month or so. And again, I wanted to ask you because you're working with a lot of people that are trying to be very successful and work incredibly hard. What's your thought? What are your thoughts on millennials? It seems to be pretty positive, where it seems like some, you know, it almost, maybe this is a better way to phrase it. It seems like you can definitely get an idea of where someone is coming from based on what information they post about millennials when they share information, whether it's incredibly negative or it's positive. So I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on, you know, millennials in the world in terms of business and fitness, but also even advice that you could have towards the up and comers to make sure that they're doing it right and not just, I guess, putting all their eggs in one basket.
Well, you know, all rich people are bad and all millennials are, you know, I mean, I just absolutely dislike generalizations. And totally. So, you know, I actually wrote, you know, a few bullet points down about why millennial businesses win, because they're community oriented, they're mission oriented, they have that social capitalism aspect for it. It works and it just feels better. Mm-hmm. It's experience focused, so it's more about the memory and not about the money. It's shareable, so it's braggable to be a customer of the business. Look at CrossFit people, tattoos, t-shirts. I mean, they overrun any city of 30,000 people or more, because I know my little town that I live in has 30,000 people, has two CrossFits, and you know, you see them all in the coffee shop before and after the sessions. So it's all about goodwill. The businesses can be travel related. And so, you know, you're going to see people organizing trips of people that work in the gym, of that go to the gym. So let's say you have, you know, a millennial type gym and everybody goes in there, they're gonna be like, hey, let's take spring break together. You know, they're not in college anymore, but they're like, hey, let's take our spring vacation together. They're going to be doing this type of stuff. And it's going to be, it's almost like you take a gym and a craft beer place and you kind of put them in a blender and you know, this is what it is, you know?
Totally.
And it's a celebration to be a part of the business. It's a win for them to buy a membership to your gym. Mm-hmm. Now, how many people look at buying a membership to a gym as a celebration, as a win? Not very many. Maybe if you go to Alan Cosgrove's gym, you look at it that way, but most people don't. They're like, oh, I got to go and sign up for this gym, and it's going to be a terrible experience, and they're going to lock me in for life. And, you know, when I'm dead, my grandchildren are still going to be paying, you know, the membership. But no, with millennial businesses, it's a celebration to buy, to attend, and to tell other people about it. So millennial businesses make their customers heroes. And they have a connection above and beyond the actual community. Being a customer is part of their identity. So it's, you know, before Chipotle poisoned everybody, you know, everyone was big on being a Chipotle person. Not so much now. And then they also have empathy, and that goes with the mission-oriented social capital. So there's so many things there. You know, Harley Davidson has done a good job of it. Apple has done a good job of it. And so, you know, I actually teach 50 millennials every summer at this Blacksmith Liberty and Entrepreneurship Camp in Lithuania, of all places. This is going on our 8th year. So I've worked intimately with at least 350 millennials. And I think they're so great. And you know what? It's the ones that I've met. And of course, there's of course there's going to be ones who are bad people. I mean, mm-hmm. there's like, you know, how many tens of millions of them? You're going to have bad people. You're going to have amazing people. You're going to have average people. You're going to have people that, you know, don't plan and prepare. I mean, there's all these things. And so I'm up with people in general, and I'm up with millennials. And I think you are one, right, Kevin?
I just made it in there, So,
I think it started in 1980 because I've dated one. And, so, I mean, you know, but you know, 31, you're definitely right in the middle of it. But you know, I just love, maybe I just like hanging around people younger than me, but I dig the energy. I dig what, this generation is capable of. And so I wish them the best. And it's funny because you can take articles written in the early 90s about my generation, and you just take out the word slacker and put millennial.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's old people complaining about kids on their lawn is all that it is. And so it's funny to make fun of millennials, but and maybe they're slightly different. But at the end of the day, humans are humans. And, you know, human nature is so much harder to overcome than, you know, a generational mindset, I think.
Yeah, this like I have this talk that I've been giving at a couple gyms locally here on like the next generation coach, and one of the things that is brought up is generational gaps. Like this is nothing new. Like it was with, you know, hippies in the 60s and 70s, grunge in the 70s and 80s, and you know, even with the punks, you know, the Green Day crowd in the 90s and stuff like that. Like this is nothing new. It's another generation gap. The old people will always kind of look at the younger people and be like, man, they have it so much easier. But I guess shouldn't it be? It should be easier now than it was 25 years ago. Otherwise, yeah, we're not making progress.
Darn right. And so, you know, one thing, I would say one of the biggest differences that I see between the generation older than me in terms of business and the generation younger than me in terms of business is that, quite frankly, the younger people treat their customers nicer and better. And, you know, they're better at customer service. They're not hiding behind corporate replies. And I think that is one of the most important things that any business owner of any age can learn from the younger generation.
Well, I don't think there's a better place where we can finish this conversation. But I will, before we do wrap up, I'm going to mention it again, because again, you like this is the incredible world that we live in, where with $15 you can get a ton of great information. You get a book shipped to your house for free from Amazon.com. But the book is The Great Cardio Myth, and it's an absolute no-brainer for you guys to pick it up. If you're listening right now, just use the wonderful magic that Amazon has made, which is one-click ordering, and just get this thing shipped to your house, and you'll be thankful that you did. Craig, outside of The Great Cardio Myth, again, like I mentioned a couple times, you're working on a ton of different things. I'm just curious for the audience, what do you have coming up that they should keep an eye out for? Just, you know, things in general that they can also benefit from.
Yeah, so I'm all about the perfect day formula these days, so people can also buy that on Amazon. If you're going to go to Amazon and click once, you may as well click twice and get yourself a copy of the Perfect Day Formula, or the audiobook, which is now read by me, so it's pretty darn cool. And then, you know, from there, I've actually gone and created this kit, which you can see the video I made for that at perfectdayformula.com. And then from there, I started to do these higher level workshops for, you know, advanced entrepreneurs and executives, where we spend a day in a very small group or one-on-one if people want the one-on-one version of it. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really advanced, deep dive into self-discovery, going through that clarity that we talked about before, getting rid of the mental clutter and getting people dialed in for absolute domination in every area of their life. So that's what I'm focused on now, less and less in the fitness industry every day. But you know, obviously I'll always still have a part of me in there and helping people out. So really excited about the future for myself, obviously, and for my clients, but also for that fitness stuff that we talked about there and the community aspect, and getting more people into, you know, all the trainers that are listening into their gyms, and also getting more people just into fitness in general. And so we're really making big progress there.
Outstanding. And again, like Craig mentioned, Perfect Day Formula, you can pick it up. And even if you're a Kindle user, you can get it for $10. If you're an Audible user, it's only $5. And it's less hurdles. If you just want to, you know, get the Audible version, you can just listen to it right next time you're in the car, walking the dog, things like that. That's how I get so much of my reading done. And you can too. And, you know, again, Craig, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been one of my favorite shows that I've done in a long time. And again, for people out there, make sure that if you do anything today, act. Like the worst thing that you can do is listen to all this awesome stuff and then not implement it whatsoever. Make this year be your year of implementation and acting on this information. So again, Craig, thank you so much. And for people out there that want to follow Craig, at Craig Ballantyne on a bunch of social media, and you can follow him on Facebook as well. And again, Craig, anything else that I left out that people can follow you at?
So go to CraigBallantyneFanpage.com on Facebook. Mm. And then, you know, if you're a professional, hey, hit me up on LinkedIn and we connect that way. And then Twitter.com/CraigBallantyne is a great way. And I really appreciate not only when you read the book, and you know, make sure that you leave an Amazon review. It really totally is important for us. I just started leaving them this year. I'm like, hey, you know, and I love all these books, but I never leave any reviews. So I've been making it a habit every time I read a book to make sure I go and leave a review. And then I also just started a new YouTube channel with a ton of stuff on the Perfect Day Formula at youtube.com/early to rise.
Awesome. All right. Fantastic. Again, that review thing is super important because, again, you guys read good stuff. You want other people to check it out. Like, it is unbelievable the power of reviews on Amazon today. So you want better information to rise to the top. That's what you got to do is submit reviews for the stuff that you read and the stuff that you do watch. And also, you know, if you're on iTunes, do it for the Fickass too. That'd be great as well. Craig, thank you so much for taking time to catch up and to chat. And absolutely, I'm booking it right now. Episode 500, which isn't that far off. We will make it happen. And I can't wait till that next chat.
Yeah, sounds cool. I mean, who knew we were going to talk about millennials today on a cardio book interview? So we're going to have some great discussions then. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to everyone that tuned in this week. Thank you so much to the Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thefitcast and people that make donations at fitcast.network and for checking out everything else that I have going on. That is going to wrap it up for this episode. We'll see you next time. Take care.